teacher among all the possibilities. And inwardly, it means having the determination to stick with that practice through whatever difficulties and doubts arise until you have come to true clarity and understanding. Remember also that the practices themselves are only vehicles for you to develop awareness, loving-kindness, and compassion on the path toward freedom. That is all. As the Buddha said, one need not carry the raft on one's head after crossing the stream. We need to learn how to honor and use a practice for as long as it serves us, which in most cases is a very long time, but to look at it as just that, a vehicle, a raft to help us cross through the waters of doubt, confusion, desire, and fear. We can be thankful for the raft that supports our journey and still realize that though we benefit, not everyone will take the same raft. Once we have made the outward choice among the many paths available and have begun a systematic practice, we often find ourselves assailed from within by doubts and fears, by all the feelings that we have never dared experience. Eventually, all the dammed up pain of a lifetime will arise. Once we have chosen a practice, we must have the courage and the determination to stick with it and use it in the face of all our difficulties. There are stories about how the Buddha practiced when he was assailed by doubts and temptations. The teaching about his commitment in the face of his challenges is called the Lion's Roar. On the night of his enlightenment, the Buddha had vowed to sit on his one seat and not get up until he had awakened, until he had found a freedom and a joy in the midst of all things in the world. He was then attacked by Mara, the god who personifies all the forces of aggression, delusion, and temptation in the mind. After flinging every force of temptation and difficulty at the Buddha to no avail, Mara then challenged the Buddha's right to sit on that spot. The Buddha responded with a lion's roar and called upon the goddess of the earth to bear witness to his right to sit there, based on the thousands of lifetimes of patience, earnestness, compassion, virtue, and discipline he had cultivated. At this, the armies of Mara were washed away. Later, as the Buddha taught, he was challenged by other yogis and ascetics for having given up austerity. You eat beautiful food that your followers put in your bowl each morning and wear a robe in which you cover yourself from the cold, while we eat a few grains of rice a day and lie without robes on beds of nails. What kind of a teacher and yogi are you? You are soft, weak, indulgent. The Buddha answered these challenges too with a lion's roar. I too have slept on nails. I've stood with my eyes open to the sun in the hot sands of the Ganges. I have eaten so little food that you couldn't fill one fingernail with the amount I ate each day. Whatever ascetic practices under the sun that human beings have done, I too have done. Through them all, I've learned that fighting against oneself through such practices is not the way. Instead, the Buddha discovered what he called the middle way, a way not based on an aversion to the world, but a way based on inclusion and compassion. The middle way rests at the center of all things, the one great seat in the center of the world. On this seat, the Buddha opened his eyes to see clearly and opened his heart to embrace all. Through this, he completed the process of his enlightenment. He declared, I have seen what there is to be seen and known what there is to be known in order to free myself completely from all illusion and suffering. This too was his lion's roar. We each need to make our lion's roar, to persevere with unshakable courage when faced with all manner of doubts and sorrows and fears, to declare our right to awaken. We need to take the one seat, as the Buddha did, and completely face what is true about this life. Almost everyone who undertakes a true spiritual path will discover that a profound personal healing is a necessary part of his or her spiritual process. When this need is acknowledged, spiritual practice can be directed to bring such healing to body, heart, and mind. This is not a new notion. Since ancient times, spiritual practice has been described as a process of healing. The Buddha and Jesus were both known as healers of the body as well as great physicians of the spirit. Many people first come to spiritual life hoping to skip over their sorrows and wounds, the difficult areas of their lives. They hope to rise above them and enter a spiritual realm full of divine grace, free from all conflict. But true maturation on the spiritual path requires that we discover the depth of our wounds, our grief from the past, unfulfilled longing, the sorrow that we have stored up during the course of our lives. As Ajahn Chah put it, if you haven't cried deeply a number of times, your meditation hasn't really begun. While many kinds of healing can come through spiritual life, in the forms of grace, charismatic revivals, prayer, or ritual, two of the most significant kinds develop naturally through a systematic spiritual practice. The first area of healing comes when we develop a relationship of trust with a teacher. Healing cannot come from ourselves alone. The process of inner healing inevitably requires developing a committed relationship with a teacher or guide. This relationship itself becomes the ground for our opening to compassion and freedom of the spirit. Where the pain and disappointment of the past have left us isolated and closed, with a wise teacher, we can learn to trust again. When we allow our darkest fears and worst dimensions to be witnessed and compassionately accepted by another, we learn to accept them ourselves. Another kind of healing takes place when we begin to bring the power of awareness and loving attention to each area of our life with the systematic practice of mindfulness. The Buddha spoke of cultivating awareness in four fundamental aspects of life that he called the four foundations of mindfulness. These areas of mindfulness are awareness of the body and senses, awareness of the heart and feelings, awareness of the mind and thoughts, and awareness of the principles that govern life. The development of awareness in these four areas is the basis for all of the Buddhist practices of insight and awakening. The power of sustained awareness is always healing and opening, and the ways to extend it to every area of life are taught throughout this program. Here is how healing is brought about by directing a meditative attention to each of the four aspects of life. First, healing the body. Meditation practice often begins with techniques for bringing us to an awareness of our bodies. James Joyce wrote of one character, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. So many of us do. In meditation, we can slow down and sit quietly, truly staying with whatever arises. With awareness, we can cultivate a willingness to open to physical experiences without struggling against them, to actually live in our bodies. As we do so, we feel more clearly its pleasures and its pains. To heal the body, we must study pain. When we bring close attention to our physical pains, we will notice several kinds. We see that sometimes pain arises as we adjust to an unaccustomed sitting posture. Other times, pains arise as signals that we're sick or have a genuine physical problem. These pains call for a direct response and healing action from us. However, most often, the kinds of pains we encounter in meditative attention are not indications of physical problems. They are the painful, physical manifestations of our emotional, psychological, and spiritual holdings and contractions. As we sit still, our shoulders, our backs, our jaws, or our necks may hurt. Accumulated knots in the fabric of our body, previously undetected, begin to reveal themselves as we open. As we become conscious of the pain they have held, we may also notice feelings, memories, or images connected specifically to each area of tension. When you meditate, try to allow whatever arises to move through you as it will. Let your attention